All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 45 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Well, this is the new year, so happy new year, everybody. Welcome back. Today in this class, we're going to be talking about the plan for our upcoming weeks of study. So we've taken a couple weeks off, and no doubt everybody is a little bit rusty and hopefully well rested and all of those other nice things that come with some time off. But now we need to get the engine revving again, get our minds back into focus with regard to ancient history. So let me tell you how we're going to approach things here. And so the first thing to address for those of you in the program this year here is something that Timothy noticed just as we were departing for the Christmas break here, is that in the calendar that I made at the beginning of the year, I anticipated possibly having a test prior to the break. And so I had marked that as a potential test date. And it, as it turns out, nope, that is not the case. So let me show you what is going to happen here in this academic year. So here is our upcoming schedule of work. Okay, this is week 17, lecture 45 today. And what we are working towards is the end of next week, week 18. And that's the goal. That's the objective. Test 3 preparation class. Right? So next week being a test preparation week, we'll have History Throughout on a Wednesday. And of course, you will receive the test preparation sheets on Monday, and that will all be linked to the review of the theme that is dealt with in this upcoming test, which is Athens and Sparta, right? So over the past 4 or 5 weeks or so in terms of class time, that's what we've been looking at. We looked at Athens in detail. We are now working our way through the story of Sparta, and we are dissecting the various aspects of Spartan government, and we have yet to come to a conclusion with regard to that government. But I'm hoping that will either come tomorrow or possibly next Monday based on the kind of activities that I'm planning. So it'll be sort of one of the two there. Well, we'll definitely should be able to get started on that if we don't absolutely conclude on that. Okay, and then the other activities I have planned for the coming 2 weeks here are a return to the writing work on the story of the rise of Athenian democracy. We left off there. Okay, that's where we ended off. We had a writing class. It was a very productive discussion that stemmed from the excellent work that you guys had done on the narrations. The narrations you did revealed that there's an opportunity here to discuss something that is absolutely critical to understanding history. And the two themes, the related themes that we were discussing in the class were understanding the sequencing of historical events, being able to grasp the basic storyline as a sequence, as a series, as a series of events over time. So, in short, grasping the chronology of history. And then the other more sophisticated perspective that we're trying to achieve, an understanding of history, involves understanding the logic of the events, the way that one thing leads to another, and that involves grasping what's called causation. And so there were aspects of causation that you evidently did already grasp, and we all of us think in terms of causation, so it's not, you know, a thing that you've never thought of before, but it's something to emphasize here now in terms of your historical understanding to take it to the next level. So it's not just about facts and the order they occurred in, but rather understanding how things
progress in a certain logical sequence. As people do one thing, it leads to a certain context. They make another decision. They make other choices. They take certain actions. That produces certain outcomes, which sets up the next situation, which again results in choices and actions and so on. It's a logical chain. History is a chain of events. And so that's something really crucial for us to study. I want to do that some more. I want to continue to work on that theme. And so we're going to return to that, and probably week after week, until I think that your writing assignments on the Rise of Athens are perfection, which I think they can actually become. And that will benefit you a lot. And then when we do some more writing in the future, probably the rise of the Roman Republic will be another theme. Then you'll be really in a really strong position to study things like that and to grasp them properly. All right, so that's what we're working our way towards. So our objective for today, though, is to get reoriented to the story, get back to kind of the context for what we're studying in detail, right? Sparta. We have this city-state of ancient Greece, right? And so let us now... One thing that I noticed as we were getting closer and closer to the end of the last calendar year was that some of this context was slipping for you guys. Some of the kind of the overall setting for the story and your ability to kind of navigate back and forth between past and present was starting to slip. And so my goal here is to kind of reestablish that context and to work on it as a team. And so I'm going to go ahead and bring up a document here, which is a puzzle because it's empty other than a bunch of interesting colored items. And so I want you guys, and with my assistance here, to reconstruct this strange item, which, you know, if some historian were looking back on this artifact, he would have no clue what the heck it is, of course, 1,000 years from now. But he would try to reconstruct it based on what we've done in history at our house, and he would be able to do it at some point. And so let's see here. Let's lay out the clues that he's going to need in order to be able to do that. What are we looking at? What are we looking at here? Juliet, go ahead.
It's basically an anchor fact for the land chart of history.
Okay, nicely put. Yeah, an anchorvac portolan chart, or to use a more conventional term, timeline, right? People use the term timeline in a variety of different ways, but typically what they mean is some sort of symbolic representation of the flow of history using lines, right? Some kind of diagrammatic representation. So this is a timeline. But I like the fact that you brought up the term portolan chart, because that was the metaphor that I liked, the way that I like to think of this timeline, as a kind of navigating device. And it's a way for us to navigate between past and present. So the timeline has the dates marked with these dotted lines, right? So it's very easy to tell, in a sense. We're way over here on the right-hand side, and history stretches back all the way to 3000 BC on the left-hand side, okay? But this is a network of pathways to the past. A network of ways of understanding how our world came to be the way that it is. Our world is the most fantastic world that human beings have ever lived in. It is absolutely the most fantastic world that human beings have ever lived in. Nobody who has ever lived in human history has lived in such an amazing world. So you can be thankful for that. You're living in the most amazing time that has ever been. And so that's cool. And one of the reasons why is because of the culmination of all of these remarkable stories that have, that throughout most of time were kind of going on in separate corners of the world, which is why we have different colors on the diagram. So the first thing to grasp about this diagram is the thematic use of the colored bars and what they represent. So when you're looking at this, what are you looking at? What are the colors? Do you see colored lines or do you see historical timelines when you look? What do you see? What don't you see? So let's get started here. We're going to label this together, by the way. I'm going to need let me just get a couple things ready here. So we're going to use, there we go. That's going to be helpful. So I'm going to annotate this based on your comments, right? So Theo, you're looking at this. What colored line do you think we should start discussing first of all here? Go ahead.
Well, I think we should start with the green since it connects all of them.
Well, all right. That's an interesting choice. It is definitely a kind of octopus with multiple branches and so on. And it's the most complicated, most integrating phenomenon in the whole diagram. What is the green?
Europe.
Yeah, it is, right? So, good. So European civilization is the civilization that is responsible for fusing this whole story together. It is responsible for what we call globalization. I'm going to go ahead and label that right over here in this area here. Maybe give it some more room. Yeah, Europe is the green. Okay, well, what about us, right? We always start in history with you are here. Where are we on this diagram, Juliet?
We're the blue.
We're the blue, okay, which is what?
America.
All right, that was perhaps a redundant question, as if you didn't know. So let's go ahead and put some blue here. Okay, so there's America up there. Excellent. All right, and we've got this black line over here that I put on here to represent the fact that all of these things are connected, and so thoroughly connected now that they have become one. And in a way, we can think of history as like a root system for the world that we live in. Everything that we see above ground now, this world that we're living in, has these roots, and they extend back thousands of years. And that's how we got where we are. And so we have these roots to the modern world. We have America as part of the story, of course, because it's an America-centric world. And on the other hand, Europe is a really big part of how the world came to be shaped the way that it is, because the Europeans impacted everybody else. Okay, who else plays a major role in shaping the world? That's what this diagram is. A representation of what I call the cardinal cultural blocks. The most important cultures in the world today. What are they? What are some of the other lines that we have on our diagram here that are a part of the world today? Rosie, what would be one of them?
Yeah.
Sorry, say that again?
Russia.
Okay, good. Okay, so that is the red one. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and put Russia over here. Definitely one of the cardinal cultures in the world. Not as important as it once was, because Russia used to be the second most important country in the world. Not anymore. Russia used to be the second most important country in the world because it was the champion of communism. And then communism collapsed, so it got to be quite a bit less important. Who would you say, what country would you say is the second most important country in the world today? Looking around, any contenders for second most important country? Theo?
I'd say China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good choice. China is the second most important country in the world over here. It is a culture whose history is represented by the yellow line, and it has become the second most important country. It wasn't for a long time. It was really in bad shape, also because of communism. But it's interesting because Russia under communism was really aggressive. China under communism was barely able to hold its own. The entire civilization almost collapsed. So we got China over here. Well, other important cultural blocks in the world, something else that is just as ancient as China and has just about as many people as China. What's that other cultural block here that is in orange? Keen.
India.
India over here. Okay. Now, it's interesting because India is a kind of subcontinental culture. It's very large, very populous, but Indian culture is kind of, is very self-contained, right? Nobody sees a bunch of people from India going out into the world and trying to force everybody else to have their beliefs. On the other hand, there is a culture in the world that is still characterized by that kind of militant kind of view of itself. And it causes a lot of headaches for everybody else. So we got one more cultural block here that really has a global footprint and is one of the most important. Juliet, what's the last one to go?
Islam.
Yeah, so we're going to put Islamic civilization over here. And so I'm going to label it as Islamic civilization. Now, I'm going to use that term because I want to distinguish between the religion, which is certainly, you know, the religious belief that people have there is certainly the dominant feature, but it's nonetheless the cultures, the governments, the countries that all of them combined are this thing called Islamic civilization. These are what I call the cardinal cultural blocks of the world as we live in it today. There's a whole bunch of other people out there, no question about it. But they did not make the world what it is. So that is one of the interesting things about history is we've got to focus on the stuff that's most important. Otherwise, there's plenty to take up our minds and get us distracted and we get completely lost in the past. Right? So there's more than 190 countries in the world. If you didn't know. Imagine if we went alphabetically and studied history. Right? Imagine. Okay, let's get started with Albania. I don't know if that's the first one, right? But how long is it going to take us before we're done with Albanian history? And then what? I don't know. Australian history. Right, and then Bangladesh, and then whatever, right? We keep going down the, that's no way to work it, right? Because what's going on in those places is not as impactful on the world as things that are happening elsewhere. So the representation that I'm giving you of history here is what I call the cardinal cultural blocks, and the lines that are drawn on here, I like the. I just kind of came up with this lately. I call these the highways of history. If you want to travel into the past, you should travel down the highway, not the byways. Right? Have you heard that expression, highways and byways? People say, I mean, that's kind of a little bit of an older expression, but traveling the highways and byways of the country. The highways are the multi-lane interstate highways, right? And all the big roads, you can get there really fast, right? But on the other hand, you know that if you go on Google Maps and you find those tiny little roads to go from one place to another, you're going to get there a lot slower, going to be a lot more stops. It's going to be a lot harder to get where you want to go. So those are the byways, right? So if you want to learn history, you want to study it, you know, you want to go down the highways. Chinese history is one of the highways. European history is the massive multi-lane superhighway of history. American history is one of the highways. So these are the ways for you to get from the present
to the path that matters. If you choose another route, you might get there, but it's not going to be efficient. And you're going to end up getting distracted by a lot of unimportant facts, stuff that you really just can't figure out the relevance of. Not so great. Not an efficient way to study the past. All right, so this is why we have this strange-looking color diagram with these cardinal cultural blocks, as I call it. And then we've got these lines that represent them. The thick ones, by the way, are the present-centric civilizations. In other words, the ones that still exist, right? The ones that take you all the way to the black, the ones that take you to 2016. All right, so they're still here. We live in this world. Okay, and then we have some thinner ones over to the right, which used to exist but no longer, right? They are extinct. And that's actually what we study in ancient history. We're studying this stuff over here, the extinct stuff. So that then leads to a challenge. How do we connect to that? How do we go back and study stuff that people did thousands of years ago? Actually, the first question is, do we, right? Should we? Why bother? Is that worth doing? And that, very crucially, is what this timeline is designed to help you answer. In other words, it's designed to help you get from where you are right now. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and put the old "you are here" on here. I've got this big "you are here" icon. So let's go ahead and put that on our... Let me just hide that and put it back to where it was. Sorry for that, a little bit clumsy, but all right, let me go put the "you are here" onto here. There we go. Work around that. Okay, cool. So that's us way over there in the corner, right? And we're looking for information about the past that somehow is connected to us. All right, well, now, let's go ahead and find that connection. Now, because of the globalized world, we can go down any of these highways to find stuff that matters. True enough. But of course, the most sensible thing for us to do, since we're up here, is just to go ahead and get on that highway, right? And say, okay, how did we get here specifically, right? The end of the blue line. All right, so what's our connection to the ancient past? We're going to leap back and say, all right, initially, our connection is, well, we're living in the United States of America. Okay. To get back to that ancient past, well, the first thing that we have to do, the first milestone, where we're going to refill our tank, here. What are we shooting for? How do we get back to the ancient past? The thing that makes it blue in the first place. What's that? Tick marks. Now we're going with tick marks. We've got the lines labeled. Let's talk about the tick marks, which is this. Theo, go ahead.
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, okay. 1776. The United States is born. So, oopsie, wrong one. I thought I was copying this one. There we go. Okay, let me expand that out. Bear with me while I... Declaration of Independence, 1776. I'm going to make that black and put it where it belongs, up here. All right, excellent. Okay, cool. All right, so that's where the United States comes from. But what's interesting is, well, if that were all by itself, right, well, then there wouldn't be any point in studying the rest of this stuff, never mind the extinct stuff, the gray and the purple, right? But as it turns out, this doesn't happen. None of this blue line happens without this green line. And so, oh, there is a connection, and that green line doesn't happen without this green line. And lo and behold, it goes back to the gray. Oh, how interesting. So we're up here
because all of this other stuff happened. And if it hadn't happened, we wouldn't be here. Okay, so what is that then? What is that connection? How do we get the Declaration of Independence? Juliet.
Christopher Columbus discovers America okay. in 1492.
Exactly. Okay, that's not the one I wanted. I want to copy this one and move it over. All right, so Columbus discovers America, and that's going to be 1492. None of the history that we are talking about has any connection to us without that. It's so funny. People today are very confused about history. And one of the confusions that they have is that, well, Columbus and other people, especially the so-called conquistadors, and even later on, you know, the various English settlers that came to North America, they had a lot of conflicts with the natives that were here. And in some cases, they were really mean, especially the Spanish conquistadors were especially brutal. And as a result, well, people think, well, if they were not nice, well, then we shouldn't talk about them so much. And that is kind of a silly confusion. The history is not about who's naughty and nice. That's Christmas. History is about who's important. And so Christopher Columbus, by the way, was a quite ingenious and incredibly brave person. There were some things about him that we wouldn't admire in modern times, but he was a world mover. And it is absolutely shocking that people don't get that today and are really trying to undermine, really, really aggressively trying to undermine the significance of what he did. And it was funny because there was an article recently on some kind of internet news site where somebody, it's probably a hoax, but it's so common nowadays for people to be trying to create hoaxes like this, and there's a motive behind it. And the hoax was that somebody discovered a Roman sword in North America. You know, buried somewhere. And the design was Roman. And so, of course, the article says, this is the title, hilarious. Christopher Columbus didn't discover America. The Romans were here before. Right? And so the whole thing is a very silly idea that anything that happened in the past that came first has to be, will kind of erase everything that we know about the past. And that we can't use terms like discovered because it's possible that there was somebody before. And so we can kind of wipe out all of history if we just find some clue that something else happened a long time ago. Now, that is absurd, because none of the things that happened in the Americas before 1492 have resulted in the world that we live in. So, by the proper standard in history, which is looking to the past in order to understand the world, by the proper standard, then, it's 1492 that counts more than everything else. All of it added up together doesn't even come close to the D in discovery compared to Christopher Columbus discovered America. So it's really quite silly to everybody, the way that everybody's so obsessed with other things that happened, including Leif Erikson and whatever else. It was all completely barren of consequence. And we need to understand, well, how did we get here? And what is the world like now, and how does it work? It's very interesting. One of the traits in the world today that you're going to be living in is going to be a very important characteristic of the culture that you live in. I'm seeing it in America, and it's very, very pronounced, is that there is a powerful, powerful drive in American culture towards what's called egalitarianism. Egalitarianism is a philosophical view, very modern. It originated in the later 20th century. And egalitarians hold that equality is the absolute standard.
standard of value. That everything must be judged against the standard of equality. And you can see it all over in the culture. And that everything must be designed. The only proper course of action in any case whatsoever is to seek to achieve greater equality. And that is definitely a powerful motive that we're seeing in the culture today. And as it turns out, guess why there's this powerful motive? Well, one of the reasons why, it's really ironic, because egalitarians want to erase Columbus. They don't want him to be, they want to erase him from all the history books. They want to erase Thomas Jefferson. They want to erase any, basically, person that really, really mattered. Because they want everybody to be equal. And so they want to take all the things that didn't matter and make them equal to the things that did matter. The only way you can do that is if you can wipe out the importance of the things that did matter. But that's the irony, is why are people acting that way? Why is egalitarianism, which you're going to see all over in the culture that you live in, why are people so obsessed with this theme of making everybody equal? Because they're not. Because some things are more important. Some people are better at what they do than others, and so on. The world is not equal, and sometimes it bothers us, right? I mean, it's natural to look around and to be upset about certain kinds of equality, like when you see really abject poverty or things like that, right? Or when you see a powerful empire conquering a weak country, and people get upset about those kinds of equality. Well, the ultimate example of that is the European discovery and colonization of America, right? I mean, this is the most powerful civilization in the history of mankind, Europe, taking over and taking over from Neolithic primitive savages. And that's the ultimate inequality. And then we get this modern world of ours. Well, and so now we have people who are really, really obsessed with equality, and they want to get rid of that fact. Which is funny, because they're doing that because of that fact. Get the point? Right? The reason why they're so obsessed with inequality is because of the history that led us to where we are now. And so what happens when they erase the whole thing? I don't know. They won't be able to. I won't let them. But it is, it's a very interesting part of where we are now. And I don't know, you will see it. You will see this theme of equality is just really, really, if you look at the presidential candidates, the one that represents it more powerfully than any other is Bernie Sanders. He has a very interesting, unique message compared to all of the other candidates in the presidential race that we're watching. Very interesting measure of what's going on in the United States today. And you should be paying attention to it, because this is probably the last election that you won't be voting in. I don't know if everybody here will be of voting age by the time the next election comes around. But this is a really good opportunity for you to pay attention to the culture that you're living in, because you're probably going to be called the next time around. You're going to have to decide where you stand, right? So maybe not, right? It might be the next one, but interesting to think about it, right? Because you might very well be in that position, and what are you going to do? Right, because your vote will be a part of the mix. Interesting. Anyway, let's get a little bit move a little bit further down back to the story here. Right, so we have America. It comes born of the Declaration of Independence, and it happened because Europeans came to the Americas. Okay, thanks to Columbus's discovery. All right, and so what's our link? None of what happened in the Americas prior to 1492 is ancient history. It's all prehistory. We don't know what was going on. We know there were people, but they were so primitive that they don't have a history. So there's no line here for us to follow in American history. There's no ancient history in the Americas. All right, but there is an ancient history to the world that we live in, except we got to go back across the Atlantic to find it. Right? And so, and not only that, it precedes Europe. Right? So the ancient history is all this stuff, way over here. We're way over here. Well, how do we bridge that gap? Right? So what happened? How come we're not in that ancient history anymore? How come we have Europe and then America? Let's start with this. How come we're not living in ancient history anymore? How come when we go to study it, we're studying something that's gone, something that's extinct? Where did it go? King, go ahead. Ooh, wow, your sound is awful. I don't know what your internet connection issues are. Juliet, sorry about that, King. Go ahead, Juliet.
Because Rome fell.
The ancient world fell, and the ancient world at the time was completely integrated into the Roman Empire. So, yes, we have the fall of Rome, and that happened in 476, and let's just be precise, A.D., right? So, oh, no, I'm learning something that I'm very jealous of. Keen is in the Caribbean, I think, right? Oh, wow, jealous. All right, so we have fall of Rome, 476 AD. And then, right, we got, this is interesting. This is the ancient world disappearing. And then, well, we went through a really rough time to get here, right? One thing that is worth highlighting on this diagram is kind of a couple phases of history here that helped us reconnect to that past. It's not completely gone. That's one of the most interesting things about world history is this chapter of history, even though it looks like it ends, it doesn't. It doesn't end. Multiple things were transmitted by these people through to us. And we still value what they did. So actually, before we talk about the transmission, what are those things? What do we have back here that the Greeks and the Romans, so the brown, the gray, yeah, by the way, we have the green and so on, right? Over here on the gray, we should just label that. I'm going to put that over here in gray. So that is Greece and Rome. Give me a chance to resize that a bit. There we go. And let's go ahead and put that in gray. Okay, there's Greece and Rome. And we got most of the colors here. Oh yeah, and what's this purple part? That we also haven't had a chance to talk about yet, but let's talk about that. Let's just get that labeled. Theo, go ahead.
Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt and something else.
Ancient history.
Well, no, it's all the archaic stuff in the region. What else accompanied Egypt?
Middle East.
Yes, and what do we call the region between the two rivers before it was known as the Middle East?
Mesopotamia.
Yeah, there we go. So Mesopotamia. Those are the two main cultures. We could also put Egypt, Mesopotamia, and Persia, I suppose. It would be kind of fitting, although we don't really have any anchor facts for Persia. But it's not completely wrong to mark that as well. So let's go ahead and put that. And so give me a second while I restructure this display here. There we go. And let's go ahead and put that in its proper color. Okay, cool. So why is that still like that? Oops. Good. All right, so now we got the cultures properly labeled here. Let's talk about our connection to the ancient past. When we talk about what it is that we're going back to study, what is it that the Greeks and the Romans did that give us cause to bother at all? Right? We're not looking for artifacts. We're not archaeologists. We're not looking for archaic bits that reveal people that once lived somewhere way back in the past. Right? We're looking for powerful insight into the world that it exists today. So what did the Greeks and the Romans do that gives us that kind of insight? Goes over here. What is it? Just making room for it. Callie, please.
Athens invented democracy and Rome invented republic.
Excellent. Okay, can you give me some dates?
I think Athens was 509 BC.
Pretty close. Theo can, Theo can tell you why. I think Theo remembers why the Romans claimed to have built their republic in 509 BC. You want to tell the story again, Theo?
Well, so I remember it as the Romans, well, they copied a huge amount of things from the Greeks, and so they wanted... for once, since they were writing the history because they had conquered Greece, they wanted to have invented something first, so they just wrote it down as they did it first.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that is one of the one thesis concerning the chronology, is that the Romans kind of who were building up their own chronology concerning when things happened in Rome. Wanted to be able to say that their republic had been born even before the democracy of Athens. And so it was a little bit of a matter of a little petty motive there, perhaps, that when they were writing their history. Both of those are circa, of course. So in other words, we don't know if it really was 508 or maybe it was 506 or 504, right? So things are pretty shaky in the archaic past, and so we know that, but anyway, that's one of the ways to remember it. It'll make more sense, it'll be more fun, I think, when we get to Roman history and we think we're able to see how much the Romans adopted from the Greeks and how they felt about it and so on, and it'll make more sense that the Romans kind of snuck that in there and said we were first. Anyway, so we've got that. Yeah, okay, crucial. All right, so good. This is good here. We're getting oriented. Tomorrow we'll fill in some more of this and make sure that we have a good orientation to the story. And that will get that will set the context for Sparta, right? So we're going back to Sparta. We're going back to Athens. And so... We now know, or are reminded of anyway, because we have covered this, but it's good to reset. It's good to recapture the context, especially after the nice holiday break and we're all resting and doing other things. So now we have this opportunity to go back and capture that context again. All right, so good so far. Thanks, everybody. And we'll continue this tomorrow and then again return to Sparta and see if we can figure out what the heck kind of government was that anyway. They had two kings. They had their own aristos, but even the aristos didn't have a right to life. And they had slaves and they had commoners and they were doing all kinds of stuff. And it's a real interesting mix that the founding fathers were quite fascinated by. What was it? What kind of government was it? So we'll get back to that story once we have this chart ready so that we can navigate back there properly and make sure that we're handling that in the proper sense as something that still matters. All right, once we know that, then we're ready to study it again. Okay, very good. All right, thanks everybody. Welcome back once again. Happy New Year once again. And looking forward to getting back into the groove here. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Mr. Powell, thank you.
Bye.
Bye.